Yeah, we're in the Shloshes Yimei Hagbala before Pesach. Nerves are frazzled. Pockets emptied. Told someone I got about 8 hours of sleep. Someone said, that's not bad. I said, a week. That's basically what's been happening. And Baruch Hashem is the story in most families at this time. Also, at this time of the year, a lot of things are officially declared lost. Because everything is, we're going to find it when we clean for Pesach, and now what? And then there are those that have to deal with the emotions of the Yom Tov by saying, by this Pesach, I thought for sure I'd be married, by this Pesach, I thought for sure I'd have Parnasa, by this Pesach, I thought for sure I'll have clarity in whatever situation I needed. And we look around and it's business as usual. So one asks the question, where do I go from here? How can we draw a chizik from a matzif what we work so hard for, and yet we don't seem to see, what do I do with this? Where do I go with this? And the answer is that that's precisely where you can go with it. At the point that you feel, we've done so much preparation, we've worked so hard, and where am I? Here's the point where you can either win it or lose it. Somebody once said, you know, there's always a problem with what you yotze mara with. Because Roman lettuce, you have to carefully check them for bugs, and especially this year, there's a problem with the Yisraelic things because of Shemitah and Shvias and the Halacha. Someone said that he heard that some of the Rabbanim were matir this year to be Yaitza Mara with the US dollar. They said it's green, and like they say in Yiddish, it's in the earth, you know, it's buried, it's in the earth. I told to someone, he said, most people it's Mara when they doesn't have enough of them. But so a man said, a wife says to a man, listen, when are you going to help for Pesach? He says, what do you want me to do? She says, you know, do me a favor, just go to shul. Let's say you'll help me. Okay, so he goes to shul, and 10 minutes later he's back. She says, why are you back? He says, what's the shiur to help, and how much do you think I can help you already? Listen, limit to what I could do, right? So where do we go from here? And the answer is, I guess, to a certain degree, we have to think positive. Interesting experience. I remember a couple of years ago, I was in a certain establishment which was owned by Yidden, and basically it provided for Yidden something in the medical care industry. And there was a sign asking, I guess in a way it's asking a lot, but it was asking all the non-Jewish employees to please kindly respect the custom of the place and not to bring chametz in. So I'm standing by the front desk and I'm watching these two, like one of them walks in and he looks from side to side, and he whispers over to a nurse standing behind the counter, anyone looking? No? Quick! Man. He takes out quickly this, like, French fries that he bought in McDonald's and gives it. And then as he's doing that, one of the managers walks in, he hides it underneath their desk. So I say, this is like kind of funny. We try to imagine, you know, trying to eat matzah in Russia, and they hid the matzah at the last second. It's like a funny world where they're hiding the chametz, you know? you think about how complicated it is. The Bar Ditshava, the Kedushas Levi, his minig was to always generate certain ideas that in Shemayim are going to trigger a seneger, a defense on Klal Yisrael. So once, the night of Pesach, he summoned some of the most vicious, vile characters in town, and he said to them that he wanted some counterband, whatever it was. I don't know what he asked for, some type of illegal something. I don't know, Cuban cigars or something that was illegal. I'll leave the rest to your imagination. They said to him, Rabbi, you know that's illegal. I know. You know that we'll be arrested if we catch it. I know. He says, Rabbi, I mean, you can't import those. There's drug enforcement agencies. There's border guards. There's, you know, custom agents. Just a drop. Anyway, sure enough, for the right price, they come around with it. Then he calls in a Yidel right before Pesach, and he says to him, do me a favor. Bring me a piece of chametz that comes from a Jewish house. And he says, Rebbe, impossible. He says, I'll pay you. And he offers them the same amount of money that he offered these other outlaws. And he searched and searched and came back and said, Rebbe, nothing doing. Impossible. I can't. Nowhere in town could I find it. So the Bar Ditshava said, Rebbeinu Shalom, he said, God of the universe, look. He says, the government has border guards, and they have enforcement agents, and they have courts, and they have armies, and huge prisons. And yet they can't stop it. And you say one word in your Torah, no chametz, and there is no chametz. So, you know, think about what Klal Yisrael is doing. Maybe we don't get everything right, but just think about this Messiah that we've handed down from generation to generation. There's a machloikis, whether the proper nusach in the text is how we open the Agadah, is it halach ma'anya, the custom is to lift the matzah and to say this is our bread of affliction, or do we say ki halach ma'anya, this is like the bread that the Jews had when they left Mitzrayim. The argument to say that this is like the bread that the Jews had when they left Mitzrayim is because this is not the bread, right? That would be then 3,000 years old. I know I've told you this. This guy, the first time, it comes to his father-in-law and they serve a piece of cake and he bites into it and he goes, yuck. Father says, excuse me? He says, this cake is old. He said, boy, you have a way with words. He says, how dare you say that? He says, and he starts screaming at him, that's the problem with this generation. He says, you know, in the concentration camps, we would have killed ourselves for a piece of cake like this. He says, yeah, then it was still fresh. So, if we say, ha lachma anya, this is the bread, that means this is the bread, this is not the actual bread that the Yidin took out of Mitzrayim. It's ki ha lachma anya, it looked like this. Still, the Arizal insists that we say ha lachma anya, because there are characteristics of the matzah which isn't just a facsimile, but what is a mamoshois, is actually what the Yidden had when they left Mitzrayim. And the Arizal explains that in the making of the matzah there are certain shameless. In the making of matzah, or the production of matzah that is done al pi halacha, that is done according to the guidelines of halacha, there is a certain holiness in it that isn't just a reflection of what was. It isn't just a cheap imitation of what was, but it actually is. And when you eat this matzah properly, you're connecting to those Yidden that left Mitzrayim in a way that isn't just a semblance, but in a way that is a reality. The Sanzerav said, when he finished eating his matzah, he put his hands on his stomach, and he quoted words from the Gemara. Sisu mei, my stomach is so happy. Sisu mei, my intestines are so happy. Where does the Gemara say this, my intestines are so happy? It's a quote from Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon. Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon was, of course, the famous son of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai. Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon was tough. He was like the Midas HaGvura. If you remember from the Lag BaOmer story, even after Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai came out of the cave, Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon still came out of the cave and said, I can't believe that people are wasting their time in this transient world that's over in a heartbeat. And he burnt up everything that he saw. And his father tried to tell him to calm down a little. The Gemara says in Masechtas Bava Metzia that the Romans once overheard Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon saying that if he were to be the job of being the detective, he would know exactly how to find the criminals. And he detailed his plan. And the Romans heard that and they drafted him and said, you are now Inspector Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, you're chief of police. And Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon took the job and he used it in a role of what he deemed to be an opportunity. Like the Gemara says, I'm getting rid of the thorns from the vineyard. And he went after certain people that indeed were guilty of certain crimes, and he enforced it. And there were many that were angry with Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon for doing so. Still, he felt that what he did was necessary. He was Midas HaDin, he had to punish those that were deserving to be punished, and he used his position in the Roman police to do so. Once, he turned over a son. He turned over a certain person, who Kaivis, the Gemara says, he was a washer. And he yelled at Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon. He yelled at him, he said, you're vinegar! Vinegar, the son of wine! Your father is such a great tzaddik, and look what you're doing! Rabbi Elazar ben Rav Shimon had him arrested, really with the idea just to scare him a little bit. But apparently in the Roman court system, justice was very swift. So swift that sometimes it was too hard to catch up with it. And by the time he went to bail him out, the Romans had him hung. He already hung. He was hung. So Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon was very distressed about this. He was very frightened. And he started doing tshuva and he cried and he couldn't get a hold of himself. What did I just do? Did I kill an innocent person? Until they came to him with the information just how wicked this person is. And the Gemara says, "Hu benai." This person that was hung and his son, Balu Nara Hamarusa, that they engaged in improper relations with a girl that was betrothed to be married on the night of Yom Kippur. So he said, sisu meyai, that I didn't do the wrong, that I didn't do the wrong thing. In other words, that even though the question is how the Elazar ben Shimon could execute capital punishment, because one can only do so with a Sanhedrin. But so that issue is discussed. Now, the Gemara says that Elazar ben Shimon was still concerned. He said, maybe when I have someone arrested or I have someone prosecuted, I'm only doing it as a personal revenge. You know, the statistics are staggering in America. Somebody put out a book now, how Democratic attorney generals prosecute people that are 90% Republican and vice versa. And when there's a 90%, when there's Republican district attorneys, 90% of the major figures that are prosecuted are Democratic, right? And then they say politics does not mix with the Justice Department. It's scary. It's scary when a person has power and he uses it for his own vengeance. And we have to bear in mind that we live in a country which is probably the most just in the entire world. But still, human nature somehow creeps in. Now, Lemaisa, Rabbi Elazar Shema was very concerned that perhaps he did this a little bit shaloi l'shem shemayim. So he performed a test on himself, whatever this means. He put himself into a marble room, which was completely airtight, and therefore no infection could come in. Considering this is many, many years before Louis Pasteur happened to write a book about infections, so this was quite, and that's like this is quoted in medical journals as being the first operation in medical history that was done with a surgical, that was done with cleanliness and was done with a certain amount of sterileness, which, you know, the idea of marble walls. And then the Gemara says he had some type of anesthesia and he had himself put to sleep and they cut layers of flesh out of him. And that was the purpose of cutting that flesh out. It wasn't one of those Weight Watchers things to constrict a person's stomach. He was going to perform a test with this meat. What was he going to do with the meat? They took the meat and they put it down on the sizzling hot sidewalk in the summer, and it did not decay. It did not decay. So Rabbi Elazar of Shimon said, it's a simon that my guf is not guf, that my guf is neshama. Now that's going through an awful lot just to prove something. But the idea over here, the Mefarshim explained, is as follows. And here we come to an interesting discussion. The halacha is that a person has to be, after 120 years, is supposed to be buried right into the earth so that his body disintegrates. And the idea and the concept is that as his body disintegrates, his neshama can go to its tikkun as quickly as possible. And as long as vestiges of his physical guf still remain intact, it's difficult for the neshama to reach its highest point in Shemayim. And that is why in Eretz Yisrael, the custom is not to bury someone in a casket, but the person is buried on a mita, buried on a bed. That's why, you know, he's in the terrorist attacks. It's always much more frightening when you see the body wrapped in a talus and the shape of a body as opposed to being in a box. So there's an inyan of the dafka that the body should decay. On the other hand, there are stories of tzaddikim that were found after many, many years that their bodies were whole. And the first story the Gemara tells us is about Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon. The Gemara says after Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon passed away, nobody wanted to bury him because they were angry at him. They didn't understand what he did. And perhaps there were those who argued or questioned his sincerity. So his body lay in rest, lay in state in his attic. And yet the Gemara says he was not affected by any worm, by any rima, vitaleya, no magnet. His body remained intact for many, many years. Once his wife went up, so much so the Gemara says that when two people had a dispute, they came and they argued with each other and the voice rang out from the body in the attic and paskin the shaila. Once the Gemara says that she noticed a worm coming out of his ear, his wife, and she was very concerned. She thought this is the beginning of the process that his body would decay. And he came to her in a dream and said, it's nothing. He said, the only reason I had that punishment that a worm came out of my ear is that I once heard them embarrass a sage, a Talmud Chacham, and I did not defend his honor. But otherwise, you should know, you don't have a thing to worry about. At one point, they did not want to release his body to be buried. The people of the town didn't want to release his body to be buried because they realized as long as he was there, no one died before their time, and it always rained properly. Except once, during an opportunity, they grabbed his body out, and they brought him to be buried by Rav Shimon Bayichai. And the Gemara tells the whole story that there was a snake, didn't want to allow them in, and they ordered the snake to go in, and Rav Shimon Bayichai had to order that his son should be buried there. And Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, of course, is buried next to his son today in Miron. Now, how do we reconcile these two things? How do we reconcile what the Zohar tells us? And in Halacha we find that Adarabah, the body, is supposed to decay into the earth, and that's the tikkun to the neshama, to this inyan that by tzaddikim, sometimes there was this nekuda that the body did not decay at all. I heard from a yid in Skver, who said he was there, as you know, one of the, besides for traveling to Reb Shimon in Eretz Yisrael, the biggest nesiyah to any place in Chutz Laaretz outside of Eretz Yisrael is Chaf Aleph Adar to Lezhensk, to the Rebbe of Melech, the famous Hasidic masters. So how did that mitzvah stay intact in World War II? There was a Yiddish square, he told us a story. He said he was there. He said when the Germans marched into Lezhensk, they ordered Jews to destroy the cemetery. And somehow they were nervous about doing it. They took 10 Jews and they ordered them to smash the Matzeva. And this Yid was one of the 10. And he smashed the Matzeva. Then the Germans ordered them at gunpoint to dig up the caver. They wanted to take the bones of the Rebbe of Malach and scatter it around. And at gunpoint he did it. And then when they finally got to his body, they said his body was completely, it looked like he was sleeping. Though the Rebbe of Malach had passed away in the early 1800s, it looked like he was sleeping. This I did not hear from him. Some even say that his beard was still wet from the mikveh. That's, I don't know, you could say Hasidim added that on. I don't know. But this is what he said. His body was mamish intact. You could see the freshness and the moisture in his skin. And he said there was such a pachad that the Nazis ordered them to reseal it, to reseal the grave, and it was left intact. And to this day, after the war, it was rebuilt and thousands of people go there. The Rebbe HaMelech said, whoever comes to his kever, he promises will not die without tshuva. The Chabina Rav once said in a drasha, this is written, that he had a problem with one of the balabatim in his town. You know, balabatim can sometimes, board of directors, I said this once was a, one of the, somebody once brought his kid to the rabbi. He said, my kid wants to be a rabbi. He says, can you talk to him? So the rabbi puts his hand on the shoulders of the kid. He says, yeah, what do you want to be when you grow up? He says, I want to be a rabbi. He says, really? Rabbi, can I ask you a question? He says, yeah. He says, what do you do all day when you're not giving sermons? He said, you don't want to be a rabbi. You want to be one of the board of directors, right? That's what you want to be. You have different ideas. He says it was the Ben Dina Rav, the famous Rav of Ben Dina. He was the shugger of the Sfasemis. He was an Ish Kodesh. So he said that once he had a toothache and a dentist came. And the dentist pulled the tooth. So he asked the dentist, how much do I owe you? So he said, Rabbi, you know, the minute is a Hanukkah, we give the rabbi a couple of dollars. He said, we're even, Stephen, I won't give you any money, and you won't pay me for pulling your tooth. He said, no, I don't like this idea. He said, why not? He says, if my balabatim, if my board of directors here, you can pull teeth, and you know, you can knock out a tooth instead of giving money, I won't be left with a single tooth in my mouth. He said, let's cut this. Okay, so anyway. So how did, what have to do with the Maimon HaMelech? Oh yeah. So the Chabina Rav had this real problem with one of his board of directors. And there was a big din Torah, and he was wrong. And Chabina Rav said, pay the guy. And the guy said, no, I'm not. He said, well, I'll be a loch, you have to pay. And he said, I'm not. And the Chabina Rav got so angry, he told him, if you don't pay, you should know. There's a Rabbi Shem on this world. You're going to leave this world without tshuva. You'll never have a tikkun. He said, oh yeah? He said, well, I'll go to the Rebbe of Melech's Siyan, and then I'll daven over there. And Rebbe Elimelech promised that no one's going to leave his Siyan without doing tshuva, so we'll see who's going to be right, you or the Rebbe of Melech. So the Chabina Rav said, I don't know the answer to your question, but I'm telling you one thing, that the Rebbe of Melech didn't mean to enforce people to go against Dinei Torah. Anyway, the Chabina Rav said this, he got into his car, and he was killed on the way. He never made it. He said he had a blowout that describes it. It's written from the Chabina Rav was nifter in the 1950s. Early 60s maybe, and he said the man never made it to the Rebbe HaMelech Siyan. In other words, he can't play around with these things. But anyway, getting back to our question. By the way, this man that told us the story in Skver, who was there, was Nifter. He passed away on Chaf Aleph Adar, the day of the Rebbe HaMelech's Yahrzeit, same day the Rebbe HaMelech passed away. So, how do we reconcile these two things? How do we reconcile the idea that the Zohar says that the body has to decay, you know, very geshmaka topic here before Pesach, but you soon see what I'm getting to. And how do we reconcile that with the idea that we see by Kamet Tzadik and the Inyan that they were whole? The Shtefanesh, the Rebbe, when they moved him to Eretz Yisrael, his body was whole. The Chazonish said they should do Levaya Barabim, that it should be a Kiddush Hashem. They say about Rameir Shapiro when they moved him, he was whole. They say about many different people. I know Pinchas Mendel in the book Slip, and they once asked him, all the people that he moved from America to Eretz Yisrael after many years, who was whole. So he mentioned two of them. And he said, the old stone, the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan Stalin, and he said, Rabbi Shraga Feivel Mendelovich, the one who started Torah Das. And then he was bombarded from other family members who were upset that he said it, you know, that, what do you mean, he's saying everyone else Nazi, he took a try to take it back. Well, you'll see it's printed in the book, that he answered that in the interview. It's hard to take things back that are printed in a book. That's why I got to be careful with coalition and internet sciences. Okay, you know, it's hard to erase. So, the answer, Rav Dessler really talks about this, and he explains the answer is simple. The guf and the neshama go in opposite directions. The neshama strives to help others, to care for others. The guf by nature is selfish, and the guf by nature thinks only of himself. Therefore, in order for the neshama to go to its tikkun, the guf that engaged in taiva, or the guf that engaged in hurting someone else, has to be dismantled and destroyed in order for the neshama, which is the real essence of life, in order for the soul to come back to its source. However, if a tzaddik during his lifetime already broke his guf, If a tzaddik during his lifetime never gave into his temptations, never gave into his taiva, and he used every fiber in his being to help others and not to help himself, so for all practical purposes, his guf has already been destroyed. Now, the Rav Dessler explains it deeper. He says the breakdown of the guf is only... essentially, you have a big machine that's not working, or you have a computer that's just messing up. The program, if you perform something illegal, you're going to be arrested, just by the little police come, right? Everything comes up on your program, the big red warning sign. So what do? You pull the plug out of the computer, and right? Because even the restart button doesn't start, and you plug it in again, and everything goes okay. He says, this union of the dismantling of the body is a hachana for tchiyas ha-mesim. Now, the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you messed up your guf so bad, it has to be totally dismantled, and I got to recreate it, so that it's aligned with the neshama. But the tzaddik, who was mevatel his guf during his lifetime, who was Meiser Nevesh himself, so Adarabba, this process is not necessary. He is already at the stage of the tchiyas ha-mesim process. You all know the famous story. I think I've mentioned it many times. I'm not going to get into it now. But they opened up once when they had to move a certain cemetery in Poland. They found one of the Jews buried in priest clothing. And it was a white beard and payas. And they wondered why, you know, how that happened. It's not the normal tachrichim. And second of all, they couldn't understand that his body was whole, which meant he must have been a tzaddik, and he was buried according to the date about over 100 years. So they looked into the zechronos of the town, and they found this story. This gentleman was the gabbai tzedakah, and he came home before Pesach one night. He was dead. He was burning in a fever. He didn't go to bed. He fell into bed. There was this huge banging on the windows, and a person came and says, I have no money for Pesach. Please help. He says, the tzedakah kass is empty. What should I do? He says, please take me around. So he took him around throughout the entire town, and collected tzedakah for him. He falls back into bed. His mom is dead. He can't breathe. 2 seconds later, somebody else is banging on the window. And again, he goes around with him. Third time, he says, I can't knock at anyone's door now. They're going to kill me. So he says, please, please, the parrot's about to throw me out of my house. I have nothing. He says, there's a bar across the street. People are still up. Yeah, but don't know if that's the right environment. He says, you got to try. Anyway, he walks into the bar, and they all turn around. The poker games start. The bartenders turn around. And he goes, Rabbi Sai, a very chashuv tzvek. And they start bombarding him with bottles and everything. And finally, one guy says, here, I'll tell you what. If you wear these clothing and you march around town, okay, holding two candles, this is supposed to be the gabbai tzedakah of the town, when everyone looks at you, I'll pay the money, okay, just for the show. So he said, forget it. And this guy fell on his knees and said, I'm going to lose my house, I'm going to lose everything. Please do it for me. You'll be just embarrassed for an hour. Anyway, so he did it. And you can imagine the news got around town. Everyone came looking and they pelted him with tomatoes and all sorts of things. And he came home and he just hung up the clothes. He was sick for 3 days. When the Sanzerov came to town, he said, I smelled the Reich of Gan Eden. Smelled the Reich of Gan Eden. And he sensed it all the way to that closet. And he came in, they knocked on the door. He says, well, Sanzerov smells Gan Eden. They said, we smell other things there. What was that? You know? And he said, she said, this is the clothes they made him wear. And they pounced him with vegetables and everything. So the Sanzerov says, when you're buried, be buried in these clothes. Because you went through the ultimate bizarre. You know, this is the person that they found whole. So when a person goes through a bitul of himself, l'shem ha-emes, he's zaycha to a shleimus. Now. The night of the Seder is that night. The cleansing of your house for chametz is a facsimile of totally cleansing out the yetzahara in your guf. The inyan of the matzah is, human nature is, if you're not in the right environment, if you don't learn, then your head swells and you begin to think about yourself. It's not because you're bad, that's human nature. Rav Dessler always took issue with psychologists who said that a person is born 50-50 and is influenced by his environment. He says, not true. A person is born selfish. And unless you do something the other way around. So he said that Cheskel Kuzma once told someone, a piece of matzah, if you leave it alone, it grows. He turns into the biggest balgaiva. The only way to keep a person from not being a balgaiva and thinking about others is to pound it and roll it and roll it. He said, that's what matzah is. That's what life is all about. The Seder is a cleansing process. So the Rabbeinu Shalom says, as you clean your house, you're cleaning your guf. And the fact that we're meiser nefesh ourselves to clean our house to the extent that we do without anyone pointing a gun at our head is a way of saying to the Rabbeinu Shalom that we want to clean our guf thoroughly through and through. And we want to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we realize that if we're pounded in life, that's because we're becoming matzah. The Kotzke once said, why are Hasidim so into dancing? He said, the union of a dance is a person is saying, I'm not even worthy enough that the floor should hold me up. I have to jump up and down.
Yeah.
You know that in the in by the Chassidish Chashan is there's this nigun they call the Rebbe of Melech's dance. You know, they go up and down, two people go underneath. So that they said it's a Messiah from the Rebbe of Melech who says, you know, if you want to survive a marriage, you gotta learn to duck and get up and duck and get up. But it's more than that to realize who are you? Who are you? That you have to, in life, you have to have at the point the guy that starts, you start feeling the world is mine and I can conquer and who's in my way? Let me knock him out. You bend down. No, no, Rabban Hashem. Don't. I'm alone. So what happens when you come Yom Tov and you feel very lonely? And what happens when it comes a Yom Tov and you're sometimes people in difficult family situations, in a Yom Tov that's very family oriented, where do I go from here? So you say you're in luck. Why am I in luck? Everyone says, I have this mazel, my car doesn't start. So what's the problem? When I bring it to my mechanic, that's the only time it starts. He says, listen, I don't see what goes on, right? Guys, it never hurts when you come to the doctor. When you bring your car to the mechanic and it doesn't start, that's good. Now he knows how to fix it. When Yom Tov comes and you're depressed, you say, okay, Rabbi Shalom, it's Yom Tov, I clean my house, now help me. Just the opposite. The segula of Pesach is to bring simcha to your heart. And if a person is broken on Pesach, or you're depressed, and there is a tendency of some people have dafka and a yom tov to be sad, or say, look, another Pesach, and where am I? Just the opposite. That's like I'm by the mechanic, that the guy has the chest pain when he's by the doctor, that's the best thing in the world. So he sees on the cardiogram, ah, oh, that's the problem, I can fix it. When a person is depressed by the yom tov seder, he says, Rabbani Shalom, it's yom tov. You want me to be happy, what should I do? I'm depressed, so help me. That's the best time. That's the skula of simcha. I'm nothing, I'm banged on the head. Yeah, that's what matzah is supposed to be. Now's the time for you to daven. There's the famous Tolner Rebbe. He's a very interesting person. He was an Ish Kodesh. Very behalten, a person who always made himself like a nothing, like a garbage can. So he used to travel in Eretz Yisrael on the Eged bus all the time. Someone once asked him, you're a Rebbe, but non shel gedoshim, why are you traveling on the bus? So he said, he used to have a shul. Sometimes he would go to the Zirchem Moshe Shtiblach and stand in the back and get pushed around. So he said, today, how do they judge rabbis? By how big his car is. That's how many chassidim he has. You know, if a big limousine, you have thousands of chassidim. He says, I'm the biggest rabbi in the world. I have a whole bus. Look at me, right? That's how he viewed it. That was his twist on life. The Seder is a cleansing process. The Maral says that if you sit down by the Seder, and especially if you're not in the mood, and you cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it works. I want to share with you a story. We'll close a little early tonight because it is before Pesach. But there's a story by the Abderav. There was a guy, the pirates was throwing him out of the house, and he was finished, and he's lost. He doesn't have a penny to his name, and they're going to throw him into debtor's jail, and he wants to commit suicide. And his wife says, go here to Shabbos and go with Russia. He says, I'm going to head for drushas now. She said, go. Unless you're going to hear my drusha the next hour. He went. So he went, and he stood there by the Abderav, and he couldn't even get in. He says, he couldn't even get in. And some of those, like a swarm of chassidim, pushed him forward, and he was like pushing forward. He got swept in. And here's the Abderav saying, you gotta have betachin. Yeah, betachin. Pesach, even if you're in an eis tzara, Abderav, it's a mile to be in an eis tzara on Pesach. Because then you, like we said, you see Hashem, this is Yom Tov, and here's my pain, here's where HaKadosh Baruch Hu cleanses you and helps you. Yeah, sure. Imagine there was a Yid named Beryl. He has to pick my name. And imagine the pirates wants to throw him out. What? And imagine when it comes to Van Nitzak, he screams and he cries to Hashem, Rabbi Hashem, you want me to be happy? What should I do? So clean my life. I messed up. It's not my fault. Good. That's what Pesach is all about. It's a cleansing process. And then he has a Yeshua. I don't know. Sounds very familiar. He comes home. He tells his wife what they said. So when it comes to the Nitzak, they start screaming and yelling at the top of the lungs. The pirates comes over to knock him out of his house. They look through the window. They see him and his wife screaming, yelling, banging. The pirate says he flipped. That poor guy flipped, you know, from the Tsaris. He says, listen. I see you're cracking up totally. Do me a favor, all right? I won't put the pressure on you. I'll give you another 2 weeks to refinance, and everything turned out okay. I once said this story to a couple, a very, very prestigious, now he's a very prestigious person, and he said he was married for 6-7 years. He called me up and asked for a source of the story. I said, the source of the story is the storybook, which I tell you, you know, like storybooks are, they say, the Sanz Rav once said about Chassidish stories, he says, If you believe that it can't happen, you're not pikaris. If you believe that it all happened, you're a stomach fool, he said. It's not a steerer. He says, I should tell you, it's a nice story. He said, should I try it? I don't have kids for 5 years. I said, okay, just close your windows, you know. Anyway, he calls me up. He says that him and his wife, they came to Van Nitzak by the Seder. They yelled their hearts out till the morning. Whoa. And then, it's a true story, then he called me up that year to come to the bris. No, he did not offer me Santa Claus, but So what should I do? So I have this meeting in my house before Vanitzak. I always say over the story. I say, you're all in the dumps. By then, everyone is screaming and pushing, and the kids are screaming and tired, and they're yelling, and this and the ends. And someone's Yom Tov clothes got ruined. And I say, you know what? We're up. They always say over the story. And I say, this is it. Who needs a baby? Who needs a Yeshua? Who needs a Shidduch? And every kid says a name, and we all think the names, and we scream Vanitzak, always until my next door neighbor comes banging on the window and says, you know what time it is? You know, right? Okay? But I can't tell you, I've seen Moifsim in every case, but this is really, this is an acknowledgement to the Rabbeinu Shalom that we really believe that to say the night has meaning, that things in your life are going to change. They said they once interviewed someone for a wood chopping job. So they called him one guy after the other. Finally they asked one Yidl, came and said, where did you work? He said, I worked in the Sahara forest. They said, you mean the Sahara Desert? He said, that was before I worked there as a woodchopper. Right? You're hired, he says. You could clean yourself. Your life could change. And that's why the Seder night says the morale is called Seder, because it could organize your life, like we discussed on Shabbos. The Beis Aaron says to the point where if somebody doesn't really believe that if you scream to Hashem the night of the Seder, there's no cleansing process taking place, you're doing it to those, I shouldn't say you, that person is doing it to those people that died in Mitzrayim during the Shloshes Yemei Afela because they didn't believe in the Geula. And what should I tell you? You know, the Elenu L'Shabeach, he brings this fascinating story of a woman who was very sick. Let me just preface this. I remember once sitting on a plane, a long time, next to a gentleman, and I kept offering him food. A Yid, very tired Yid. And he kept saying, no. And finally I said to him, sure you don't want anything? He says, I can't eat. I said, why not? So he tells me, you know, he says, I don't have a colon. And he explained to me the gory details of his life, how he, there's a whole process, how he has to clean himself because he doesn't have a digestive system that has the power to, you know, how he lives. So I shouldn't have said it, but it blurted out for me. I said, how do you live that way? And he looked around and says, I say it differently. Can you imagine this way and I'm alive and God gave me life? That's a very interesting, not an interesting, a very powerful perspective. So Yolein L'Shabeach brings a story of a woman that was very sick in the hospital. And someone came to visit her. And she said, I can't wait for Tuesday morning. Tuesday mornings is my best, it's the best day of my life. That hour Tuesday morning. She says, what happens Tuesday morning? She says, all week she has such a problem. She doesn't have a natural digestive system. And the waste piles up in different mechanical systems, and once a week there are technicians that come in and clean her out. So she's clean for about an hour. She says, during that hour I say Tillim. It's the only time I could daven. But I live for that Tuesday morning. I'm lucky to be alive just for that hour. The Seder night is that hour. It's the hour that we're cleaned. And that's why Kadesh comes before Urchatz. Shouldn't it first comes Rechitza, first comes washing, then comes Kedusha? The power of the Seder is that God gives us a gift. It's one of the reasons we steal the Afikoman, to show even though we don't deserve it. But you have to believe in the Tahara. If you believe in the Tahara of the Seder, then you never know. Your scream this Seder night could bring Yeshua's that'll give us many, many good stories to say in years to come.